With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, Joe, also I've got to tell you that I've had some weird experiences in Coventry. I had a weird experience. I went to a nightclub and I didn't realise it was like an under 16 nightclub.
Ah.
And I was invited there. I was invited there to go on stage. It was like a personal appearance. And it was really bad. I went onto the stage and everyone started swearing at me from the front. And this one guy was swearing at me. So I got the bouncer to kick him out. And he was about 15 years old, maybe 14 years old.
I was going to say, by guy, you mean child.
Yeah. I got the child kicked out of the nightclub. And then he got taken around the back and he was made to apologise to me.
I just want to corroborate and check if this could have been my own brother. Do you remember what he looked like?
He's quite sweet, actually. Lovely, sweet guy. He also got really upset because he started crying.
Sounds like my brother.
But then also I met the guy who had organised the night, and he tried to pitch to me saying, do you know what would be a really good idea? It's Made in Coventry. They were like, Made in Coventry would be a really, really good idea for a TV show. But I just don't think Coventry is like, to anyone who lives in Coventry, and Joe, you're from Coventry. Coventry is not a pretty place.
Oh, shut up. We've got the oldest surviving Tudor street.
Sweet.
And, you know, 1.5 cathedrals.
Really? Uh-huh, so it's a proper city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
City of Culture 2021, nonetheless.
No, it can't be.
Yeah. Next year's City of Culture.
Next year as well. I'm,
So, you know, I presume they're going to be needing a lot of digital projects should they want any sort of podcast projects. I'm just putting it out there, trying to manifest.
But it's not that pretty, is it?
Okay. Here's the thing. We took the brunt of the Second World War.
The
you
bombings,
are welcome.
Yeah.
A lot of it was...
Did you get loads of bombings?
I personally shouldered many a bombing.
They used
for
it for
our
target
country.
Practice. Yeah.
It was because it used to be like a centre of manufacture, like Land Rover, and I don't know, maybe Mercedes, I don't know. I'm just saying cars. I've heard of some cars.
Yeah. Toyota.
Yeah.
Tesla. Yeah. Just saying cars.
The Earlston Tesla. Yeah, no, there was lots of engineering, lots of factories which like switched to, I think, and lots of planes were built there, which were then used in a war.
Which war?
War 2. That time it was personal. But so it was a target for bombing to try and like reduce the industry. And so, yeah, great swathes of the city were flattened. And then, like, you know, there was an injection of cash in the sort of 50s and 60s. So lots of stuff was really, like, built really quickly. So there was a lot of concrete. And
they were like, fuck, we got to build things. So they just built.
Yeah. So they just threw it up. So then they've spent, since the year 2000, the sort of millennium project has been to tear all of that down and start again. So it's becoming like a new little utopia. You know, everything's pedestrianised.
No, it's not. You cannot say Coventry is becoming a new utopia. It's absolutely toss. It's so toss, Coventry.
Have you been to the Transport Museum?
It's also, I feel
you
like...
You can sit in a DeLorean in the Transport Museum and pretend to be Marty McFly. Show me a greater vision of heaven than that.
Francis, have you ever been to Coventry?
I think I have been to Coventry. It's got a lot of, yeah, it's got like, it was like the centre of the motor industry, right, in the early days.
Yeah. Do your family still live there?
My mum does, yeah.
She does. And she likes it.
I guess. She keeps...
And bicycles.
Yeah. Rally bicycles.
Bicycles. And was the penny farthing but invented there? Or?
I'll take it. Yeah. Sure. I don't think anyone in this Zoom call is equipped to correct me. So I'm going to take penny farthings, e-bikes, tandems, tricycles, all Coventry.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Francis is Googling everything. Francis is literally
cheat.
You're just Googling
anything. But I mean, the Hillman Avenger was also built there, I think, if you...
Yeah, classic.
Wait, so you then went to university, and were you a bit like... So when I decided to go to university, I was a bit like, I want to go as far away from London pretty much as I can. So that's why I went to Leeds. I was like, I want to go to Leeds. I want to do that. I think it'll be fun. So I'll get away from London, all that kind of stuff. Were you, like, with commentary, were you like, I want to go somewhere which is not near here?
I just thought, I want to go somewhere where I can catch a bus more than once every 37 minutes.
Shut up, that's not in Coventry, you can't.
And I wanted to be able to, you know, buy a T-shirt after 5 p.m. I just wanted... A little more sort of freedom, I suppose.
Are you serious that there's buses in Coventry only come once every 37 minutes?
I think it might be different now in this new utopian age, but...
It's not a utopia. I can't get over the fact that you think Coventry is like the new utopia. Do you know where we should go? Coventry.
Because I'm bidding for a job as part of the City of Culture 2021. I'm going to be the face of that project. I kid you not.
But you did. So you wanted to go and so what did you did you want to go into? You wanted to said you wanted to be a star, but you wanted to go into fashion. You wanted to go into
time
design.
Time travel, yeah, preferably.
But what did you think that you wanted to do?
I don't know. I just sort of. I think I had wanted to act, and I did. You know, I was at one of these like young persons. Like
amateur-ish
theatre companies, that was, you know, you go on a Saturday and like I started that when I was 8. My dad would he was a trainee teacher, and he'd like take on loads of extra marking to pay for the Saturday theatre school. And then I was like, oh, Dad, you can audition to be in the plays. So then you have to drive and rehearse 3 or 4 nights a week. He's like, I guess I'll do some more marking. It was the bane of his life for 10 years.
But epic, man, that he did that, right? That's the great thing about parents when they're supportive, that he'll go out of his way just to make, you know, his son happy.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly sweet. And, it was, like, urged along by a spot of the old bullying in like, normal school. So it was like, oh, Joe needs a safe space.
Oh no! Oh. Here comes the sob story from Coventry.
Really anchored this one. But no. So then, you know, I was doing that and sort of thought, oh, maybe that's the thing. But I guess I didn't really realize like lots of kids there were then getting ready to go to drama school. But yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I'd sort of thought like,
yeah, why didn't you do drama school? Why didn't you go and say like, this is what I want to do? If you had loved it from sort of 8 years old,
I don't know. I think I just got really moody at about 17, and then everyone around me who was doing that was very cheery, and
where did you get moody? What do you mean?
I don't know.
Like an emo phase.
Yeah, kind of. I just sort of, I just had a real chip on my shoulder because I guess, I don't know if there was a slight thing of like all the other kids at this theatre school were going to private schools. They lived in the sort of villages outside of the towns and it all was like, it was a bit of a breeze. And I guess I felt a bit bitter and sort of thought chippy. Like, oh, does that mean, yeah, very chippy. Like, and so I guess I thought drama school would sort of be like not really for me. So then I went to art school and met even more posh people than I could ever have imagined.
But it is a thing, though. The arts are, you know, there are so many people from privileged backgrounds in the arts these days. I suppose it's because it is otherwise quite a risky career path, right? Which not everyone is willing to take the risk, and I suppose it's easier for people from money backgrounds to kind of have a safety net if it doesn't work out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Support it when they're auditioning and things like that while you're at, you know.
Yeah, my family were terrified because they at least, like the two things I'd sort of wanted to do as a teenager were either like fashion, i.e. a trade, like learning to, you know, become a tailor or something, or acting. And both of those things, like all my family were a bit like, well, no one's done that in our families before, but it makes sense. We know what that is. That's got a path. You can hopefully like take a few years and make some money. And then when I was like, okay, now I think I'm going to do sort of experimental time-based videos.
And become a comedian.
Like, yeah. You've gone completely insane. So I did that at university, then obviously no job prospects. Sort of worked like in a cinema. And then, oh God!
Did you? I've always wanted to work in a cinema. I've always wanted to work in there ever since I was a kid because I always thought you'd get free pick a mix and you could watch any movie that you wanted to watch. And I thought that would be like the most epic thing.
Yeah, you immediately get sick of pick a mix and popcorn. You will like never want to touch it again in your life. It's like my nanny Pam used to work in the Cadbury's factory in Birmingham, and they say to you on your apparently they would say to you on your first day, you can take as much as you like and just eat it throughout the day. And so of course she like gorges herself and then spends the whole night like writhing in pain, vomiting because she's just overdosed on sugar and cream, and then never touches it again like for the next 10 years working there. So it's the same in a cinema. I think that's the tactic. But yeah, so like, you know, in a cinema, then in an art gallery, and like did a bit of modelling.
Hey, there he is.
Clang. I made £50 modelling in my entire 12-month career.
Wait, what did you get any big campaigns?
No.
Well, yeah, that big £50 campaign.
I did one really cool
Coventry
show.
Council.
Yeah, it was a sponsored accessibility project to the fashion industry.
I thought you were going to say sponsored walk.
A sponsored catwalk.
Wait, there was one that you said? There was one?
I did one really cool fashion show where I like met Kate Moss and loads of fun people. And I think I like got really drunk at the after party and fell in love with, what's her name, Jamie Winston. And
love Jamie Winston.
She's so fun. I mean, she were like, this is the only time I've met her in my life. It was probably about 9 years ago. She will not remember this. But we were dancing together and I was just like, you're incredible. Will you marry me? And she just like barks laughter in my face, turns around, walks off, never saw her again.
So wait, so you see, your modelling career was thriving.
A disaster, yeah.
And but it's true. Going back to that same thing, as you said, Francis. What's so interesting? When I was
modelling
theatre performance, when I was doing, you'll never think of I never. I was on the Storm board, so I was with Storm Agency for 7 years or 6 years, and I was on their special bookings. Right, never once was I ever put onto their men's board. Never once. I was the only person who was on the special bookings, but also wasn't on the men's board. Every other person was, and I was like, this is horseshit. And then I remember once I was like, what the hell? And then I remember this one time that I was sent to a. They sent me to my only ever modelling shoot that I went to. It wasn't a modelling shoot, but it was like a scouting place. We had to walk into a room and like sit there and go and walk in. They look at you, and they did send me to one ever. And it was the most intimidating thing I've ever done, because as you walk in, you basically get knocked out by everyone's cheekbones, and you're like, well, I'm never.
I thought you were knocked out by their elbows.
Also, I'm 5'8" and a bit. I was like, this is just never going to work.
That's the worst. For my first fashion week, I bought a pair of like Nike, like the tallest Air Max possible, and then like, you know, put an extra layer of socks underneath, and still would walk into those rooms and be 2 inches shorter than all the other lads there. And it was just horrible. I really hated
it. It's horrible. But also, Joe, you mentioned, and I think it's important to touch, because we do get a lot of these messages and things like that. You said that you experienced like some bullying when you were younger. How old were you when that happened?
Well, just, you know, teenage years, sort of.
Really?
Yeah, 13 onwards.
See, kids can be freaking hard sometimes, and like the school is. This is what everyone. You know, I remember my dad always saying to me that, like, oh, your school years are the best years of your life, and I was like, they surely can't be.
You must have like, a horrible life.
And then you discovered bullying.
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But it's true that like when you're at school, you're kind of like put into this box of like who you are and what you kind of get represented this person. Actually, when you get out of school, you realize how insignificant it all is.
Yeah. And in a way, I look at, like, I've got teenage brothers now, and, you know, it's tough for them as well, but I'm a bit jealous. They've got access to other, like, communities through the internet and whatnot, and so it means that, like, so I look at my older brother, he's 16, he's just going into college now, and, you know, I look at his, like, friendship group, and they're really mixed in terms of, like, gender, sexuality, background, And there's no like sense, and they make that, I don't know, they might be seen as the sort of like misfit gang, but in a way they're like, they're the coolest kids. And I hope he never hears this. I do not want Fraser Sutherland to know that I think this of him.
Fraser Sutherland, you legend.
So annoying.
But it's, do you know what? It's so right. You're saying that they are like, you know, they are, they'll be the cool ones.
Yeah.
They'll be the cool ones, right? But I think that being a kid now, I actually don't envy kids nowadays. I think it's tough.
I think there's more pressure to, like, yeah, to sort of perform. If you, you know, if you're allowed to have an Instagram at, say, 15 or something, and suddenly, yeah, there's all these different codes of how to behave and present yourself. Yeah. And, like, especially for the girls, like, I just, God, I would, if I was, like, a father of a young girl now, I would be ripping my hair out with panic.
What's so interesting is, obviously, we've kind of, all these technologies came about when we were at school, and they were sort of novelties, and we kind of sort of, oh, that's interesting, look at this, Instagram, Twitter, things like that. But all these kids are growing up, and these are sort of just in the, they're sort of, you know, part of the furniture of our world, right? It's, it, you know, they just grow up and these are the things that they grow up with. So it's never happened before like that. So I it's interesting. It's like an experiment on these children, what they're going through, I suppose.
But guys, I feel like it's an experiment gone wrong, because I feel like this constant access to, like, everything. Like, the greatest thing that we had when we were kids, right, is that we were so innocent to everything. We didn't know anything, right? Like, you know, if you wanted to find out about stuff, you'd have to go to the library and get a book. Like, that's what you'd have
you
to do to learn.
That, Jamie.
No, I never did that. Don't know why everybody put me into that bracket. That's what I do all the time. But it's kind of true. But now, everyone has a voice, and you can find out information anywhere. And I think that's wrong, because you lose your innocence so quickly.
I just can't erase the image from my head that I now have. Like, as adorable as you are, Jamie, I'm sure you were never truly that innocent. So I picture you walking into that school library and saying, do you have any books about drugs? Sex, that sort of thing? Anyway.
But you know what I mean, though, right? Like we it was like, we had to find out stuff. We had to purposely go out and find stuff, right? You'd have to, like, ask questions, or you would have to. But now you can just Google, or you can sit on Instagram or TikTok or whatever it is, and you're flooded with information. And I don't know if that's a good thing.
But then, like, we always had sort of peer pressure and groups, like group mentality, which I think has just translated into the internet. So I think you would still sort of be, you would still find yourself a little bit torn and maybe be overexposed to information you weren't ready for. It was just in a face-to-face way. So it's hopefully the good balances out the evil for that generation. Because like I say, I look at my brother and his friends, and it's like, because they have this access, they're also really, like, empathetic. They're really political. They really want to stamp out racism. They really want to stamp out transphobia. But this is what I say, is like, this is my brother's group of mates. I'm sure it's not like that for all the kids in the year.
Yeah, but do you know what's interesting, that they have those opinions? Like, those opinions, you know, at 16 years old, I was just caring about whether or not I was going to shag a girl. Like, that's all I, you know, that's all I cared about. Where you're saying that your little brother, you know, he has opinions and wants to stand for stuff, and that's great, actually. That's kind of really exciting, I suppose.
Yeah, but again, we mustn't let him know that we think it's great.
Fraser Sutherland.
His ego's big enough, man. It's, oh. Yeah, it's infuriating.
But I think that's interesting, because do you know what, Joe? That's actually really interesting you said, because I've been, like, sort of, you know, I've been sort of tossing and turning about this idea of exiting social media for a while. I've just been thinking, like, it would be a good thing to get off social media because of lots of reasons. And actually, you know, what you're saying there is actually, what a good thing is that it gives you the platform to have opinions and learn stuff, which was never really around before. Do you see what I'm saying?
Social media, the internet. I mean, people don't really learn that much from TikTok. I'm sorry, Jamie.
You would be surprised, buddy. My algorithm on TikTok is bizarre. I have the most weirdest algorithm. I had, like, on my algorithm is like all these people just talking about, like, how to become successful, and I don't understand why every single one of them is these like people just talking nonsense. But I don't know. I have.
You
I
want
have
more
real
twerking,
sort of...
don't you? Where's all the twerking then? That's what I came here for.
But I have a real, I have a real love-hate relationship with it. But Joe, as a comedian, right? Do you feel like you have to constantly be active on social media?
No, I think a lot of people do feel pressure, and it depends on what your skill set is and what you're trying to do for your job, really. And for me, I realize like I'm not someone who does like fast turnover. I'm a slow perfectionist. I need to work on a project for a year and do like 10 drafts before I can then put it out and sort of be like, right, it's there.
Oh, really? You're a perfectionist.
Yeah,
that way.
Yeah. So
is that tricky for comedy though?
Yeah.
Yeah, because surely with comedy it's kind of about, you know, it's raw, right? You have to kind of you're going on stage with material that's never been. It's been prepped, but it's raw at the same time.
It's raw, but it can be good because it means you're just sort of never finished with stand-up.
You're never satisfied.
You'll always think like, oh, there's one slight way to improve that bit. I can just, you know, I can twist that a little. I can add another, like, sentence. So, you know, things kind of become clearer the more you do it if you stay alert to it. But, yeah, so really I only... I think the attitude I want to have, and maybe the problem with social media, is I only want to sort of have like half an hour a week where that's my social media time. But the problem is sometimes other people don't know that that's how you're using it. So I think sometimes there's a bit of an expectation that you're always available on it. And so, yeah. You know, if you don't respond to messages or to certain events, like straight away, it can be.
Do you think people still think that? I think maybe there was a moment where people were getting. But I mean, I don't know anyone who gets offended not responding on social media these days. Do you?
Yeah, I get offended if people don't. I messaged Louis Theroux on Instagram, and he looked at it and didn't reply. I was really upset by it.
What did you say to him? Hey, Louis, I'm a really big fan.
No, I just messaged him. I messaged him asking him to come on our podcast.
Okay, that's... it wasn't like, hey, Louis, I preferred Tiger King.
Yeah.
But, Joe, I tell you what is amazing for you, right, is that you said that you were sort of 8 years old going to the Edinburgh Fringe and doing that kind of stuff, that nostalgic thing, but then you did Edinburgh, you know, in 2000, you had your sellout tour. In Edinburgh, not tour in Edinburgh, but you had your sellout tour in
Edinburgh.
It's
very much a one-location tour.
But you did, you had your sellout show, which for you must have been like, this is everything that I've wanted, like, not wanted, but kind of saw and did and experienced when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was Matt. It was, because it was my third one, three years in a row of doing, and the first two, nobody came.
what was the smallest audience you played to?
I mean, zero. The first night we cancelled. Oh no! I remember. There was one night in the first year that we cancelled because one person who had not bought a ticket, but like if you're sort of working on the festival, you get these passes to be able to go and see stuff for free. And it was like one kid had come along and was like, "I've just finished my shift and I really wanted to see your show."
You're like, "We're cancelling it."
I was like, "I'm really sorry, mate, but it's not a show if it's two of us. It's counselling. That's a therapy session for me, and you will feel cheated."
But then you got to your 2019 show, and that and you sold it out. That's pretty mega, though.
Yeah, it was great. It was a sort of weird, like slightly bittersweet, because I think having done three in a row and sort of like feeling like there'd been no. This is why I say I think comedians should really only do like maybe two shows in a row, then take a break.
As in two Edinburgh shows and then take a break.
Yeah, maybe two Edinburghs, then maybe take a break, or just, you know.
So you're quite pleased, in fact, about the whole, like, you know, Edinburgh being cancelled this year.
Are you backing me into a corner, Francis?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I just wanted to know.
So what you're saying, Joe, is that you're happy that this...
I just want to say on record, I am not happy that a virus has infected many, many people, ended careers and made life very difficult. But I have enjoyed having the time to finish some other projects that I just kept putting off. Like baguette making. Yeah.
I still love that you made a baguette. Honestly,
no, you made
obsessed.
Three baguettes at a time.
Three at a time.
Sorry. Three baguettes.
And do you know actually wolverines don't even have, like, I mean, they're like really pathetic animals, wolverines. Everyone thinks they're like scary.
What? What? Is this going from where he said that Joe with his three baguettes looked like a wolverine? Is that what you've got?
It's been bothering me all. Yeah. I haven't been able to think about anything else.
Okay, right, listen, Joe and everyone, we have to have the answer to the question of the week.
So you said, Joe, how much did you say?
250 milliliters.
Yeah, Jamie?
I said 330.
It's actually 130 milliliters.
Mm-hmm. So it is a travel-sized...
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of blood.
Well, you know.
I'm looking around for something for reference.
I know, so am I. I feel like that is quite a lot of... Like, if you cut your... That's why when... that's why when people... break their banjo. Is it banjo string? They do that. Yeah. Whoa, and it snaps.
Why
there's a lot of blood. There's a hell of a lot of blood.
Yeah. And, well, presumably there's also not like a stopper. There's not like a lid on it then. So it's just going to keep going.
There's no stopper.
Yeah, it's just gushes.
Well, you know, if you think of the top as the... lid of the bottle. Okay, yeah, the penis. And then, you know, that's where the string is. And so you're going to cut that, and so all the pressure that's building up, it's just going to keep...
I don't know the science behind it, but...
Clearly, neither do I.
Hey, Joe, listen, we've taken up far too much of your time. Buddy, listen, when I saw you when you were at the Comedy Roast Battle, I honestly thought you were completely genius.
You're
honestly, no,
too
you
kind.
Know, you really were. You were genius because it's, you know, from my very slim knowledge of comedy, it's pretty hard to do those things, and you made it just seem easy and just hilarious. And so I can't wait when we are allowed to come back, we can go and watch you on tour, because you'll be going on tour at some point, I assume.
Maybe, yeah. Well, you know, I've got a secret project on the go, and fingers crossed if we get the green light on
that. Oh, what's that?
I'm not gonna jinx it, but I'm just gonna put it out there into the universe. But yeah, it's a scripted project.
Hello.
But so yeah, if we get the green light on that, then it might mean a bit more break from stand-up.
Oh, really?
Actually. Yeah.
Joe, honestly, I wish you that you were genius, completely genius. And honestly,
keep
we really
talking.
Appreciate it. Here we go. And we can also follow you on social media, Joe Sutherland, can't we?
Yeah, I'll be on there for half an hour a week.
Yeah, and we can go to your website, which I actually Googled before speaking to you. Love the little website that you've got.
Thanks, I made it myself with the help of squarespace.com.
Joe, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Listen, what we like to do at the end of the podcast is leave our listeners with something inspirational.
Oh my God.
Okay, I should have told you that before an email. I sent to Joe an email saying, this is what you have to expect. And then I was about to write, also at the end, we asked a question, but I thought, I'm just not going to say that. I'm just going to just let on you without warning.
Okay, well, currently, and in fact, I've been occasionally looking at the time during this to see if I think we're about to wrap up so that I can go and finish watching Paris Hilton's new documentary, This
Apparently
Is
it's
Paris.
Amazing. Apparently it's amazing.
It's one of those where you're not quite sure how much control she has over it. A lot of these documentaries, my favourite genre of any programming is pop star tour documentaries.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of them, you know, like how Beyoncé, like the credits on hers will be like created by Beyoncé, shot by Beyoncé, edited by Beyoncé. And you're like, okay, I don't know if we're getting like a really raw, honest vision of Beyoncé here. But this one, it's sad at times, you know, but I do think she's
cool.
Very inspirational.
Yeah. She's
well, I mean, she kind of created the influencer, you know, sort of strategy.
Created the selfie, created the ego, created the platforms.
So hang on. So that's your inspirational thing, is that we should go and watch the Paris Hilton documentary.
You should go and watch This Is Paris.
Joe, listen, buddy, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. And everyone, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.